Concept four, find a balance. Got a question, Jerry?
Yeah. Again, this may be more unique to a certain background skill set. In the IT world, oftentimes, just give you an example, I had a recent interview. The first, he's talking about 10 minutes, the first 45 minutes hour was an aptitude test. So throw that into the mix where basically you come in and you've been doing a job for 20 years and you have to walk in and basically try to demonstrate through a test that you're capable and what you do. So how would you, you got any thoughts on how?
Yeah, the aptitude tests are back here. This is about the person one-on-one contact, right? Aptitude test is back here. It starts, you know, it's another data point. But what we're talking about here is the interaction between the two people in the interview process.
I'm just saying, for me, I think that can be a challenge because then when you take
Absolutely.
The test, depending upon, and you don't necessarily know what you're going to be up for going into it and what to expect, that can throw you right out of your game in the very beginning.
That's where confidence plays the part, right? You got to believe that you did the best you could in that aptitude test and move forward. Okay, and I got news for you. Those of you who've taken those tests, they're just tests, you know, okay, unless you really blew it. Unless you're really, like, you know, they need you to be a 95 and you're a 2. They're just another data point. That's all it is. It's another data point, okay? Now, it may be more important in, like, an IT profession or maybe accounting where accuracy, you know, yeah, okay, I get that. But it's just another data point. The real test is this. If I'm going to hire you, you're going to be on my team. I got to put up with you. I got to live with you after you come to work with me. I'm going to be doggone sure that you're as good as I can get. Because you know what? I got to tell my boss I hired the right person. So we out, you know what? His aptitude test was not great, but look at this guy. Look how good he is. And you come in and you do the job. Aptitude tests aren't always necessarily the telltale sign that you're not going to do the job well. Back to find a balance, okay? The information should be an exchange of information. The interview, rather, should be an exchange of information. So what does that look like to anybody, the graphic there? What does that look like? Nobody knows.
Seesaw.
A seesaw. That's exactly right. Okay. So it's a seesaw. Okay. So we've got three kinds of seesaws. Teeter-totters, whatever they call them now. Okay. These are the seats. Okay. So if you think in terms of this is you, and this is the interviewer, okay, which one of these three represent the best dynamic in the interview process? Who wants to vote for number one? Nobody? There's not one brave soul among you? But if I told you it was number one, what would you do? Who wants to vote for number two? Everybody. Who wants to vote for number three? Nobody. You can? Okay, we have one brave soul. All right, so you've all been on teeter-totters before, right? All right, so we're on this teeter-totter. That's you and that's me up here, okay? So what happens if you step off the back of the... How do I feel with my legs hanging up in the air? You know, teeter-totters are only fun when they're going like this. But when they're like this, you're like, oh, man, I'm at risk, right? Not a good thing, especially since it's their playground, right? What's this, okay? This is with you with your legs up in the air. It's you are totally uncomfortable because any moment you could get bounced out the door. Okay, so balancing in a teeter-totter, going back and forth is the best way. So the point of this is there should be an exchange of communication and questioning. But how many of you actually prepare to ask questions when you walk in the door to an interview? One or two, three or four? But I'm going to show you here in a moment, that should almost be 50-50. But how many of you really come up with 50% of the questions? Not many, okay? I very rarely see that, where the individual is asking about as many questions as I asked. Very rarely does that happen. So think of the interview as a teeter-totter, okay? I told you we'd use models. They'd be helping easier to remember. Next time you walk into the interview and you're sitting in front of somebody, Ed, it's a teeter-totter. Okay? That's you right there if you don't ask questions. As soon as you do this, you disarm the interviewer. You ask a question. You can't screw up when you ask a question and they answer, they're talking. Unless you ask a dumb question, right? So it's got to be related. If you did your homework, you don't have dumb questions. You did your research. So the more you know, the better off you're going to be. But there's got to be an exchange of communication, right? It's like a seesaw. More fun. Point five. Yes, sir.
But doesn't the interviewer lead off in
this whole thing? It's there. That's a very good point. Thank you for that entrance. We're going right to that point. Okay. How many of you have played volleyball? Everybody's played volleyball once in their life, right? Okay. So somebody has got first serve in volleyball. Somebody's got to be at first serve, right? No, usually you toss the coin to get first serve. But guess what? It's their court. It's their net. It's their ball. They get first serve, to answer your question. They will, because they feel like they're hosting the conversation, naturally start the conversation. Have you ever been in an interview where they sit there and wait for you to start it? No, of course not. Be no different than if you invited somebody into your home. You'd open the door. Would you like some water? Let me take your coat. You're hosting the event. They're hosting the event. So it's their volleyball game, okay? When is volleyball fun? When the ball's going back and forth, right? When you ever see a really good volleyball game when it kind of keeps going and they hit it twice over here and then they hit it once over here and they save a dive and some are slams and some are lobs, and that's when it's kind of neat, right? It's the same way in the interview process, okay? If you think of volleyball, the idea behind this is to have a conversation, not an interrogation. And often, the interviews are interrogations. You allow the employer to ask you all of their questions, and then you finally get around to asking one, but now you got 5 minutes left and the interview's over. Okay? An interview, like a seesaw, should be like a volleyball game. But what's some of the rules in volleyball? How many times can you hit the ball before it's a foul on the same side of the net? No more than three. On the third one, it's got to go over. There's your rule. Okay? The employer asks one question, answer it. But don't let them ask more than three in a row. Okay? Because as soon as you start letting that happen, they're going to get on a roll. And they're going to go roll you right over. Okay? Let them. Now, the only exception to that is in the first 10 minutes or so. It's their game, remember? Yes, ma'am.
Right. Okay, so I've been on a couple interviews and it involves search committees which have prepared
yep.
questions, and they do ask more than one.
Yep.
As you go around the table. So.
Yep. So when they're asking more than one, okay, ideally what you want to do is turn one of their questions back around with your response. Okay? And the only time you're going to have a problem with this is if they say, we're going to have a very formal interview now. We've got this list of 32 questions we're going to ask you. Please do not ask any questions until we get to the end. It's kind of like, you know, when they say, we're going to announce all the winners of the awards. Please hold your applause until, you know, and then some dummy claps, you know, and then everybody starts clapping. So if they make a point of telling you that, then you got to honor it and you take your hit. That's it. But usually that doesn't happen. They're not so stringent. You're talking about a unique situation with a panel circumstance. But unless they tell you, don't ask any questions, you got to ask questions. It gives you a chance to catch your breath. It gives you a chance to demonstrate your interest. It gives you a chance to show them your research. Okay? Yes, sir.
It gives you a chance to have a break so you don't get asked another question.
That's exactly right. That's what I said. Catch your breath. That's exactly right.
I have two questions that I'll get answered. After that initial 10 minutes, about, and I know everything's probably a little bit different, but about how long is the rest of the interview? How long can you kind of expect? Maybe another 20 minutes?
Some people are really weird with this stuff, but in my experience, if I don't spend at least an hour with somebody, I don't know how I can possibly make a good judgment call. I got to wear them down a little bit. It's true. I got to find out. Can they keep talking to me? Or are they a flash in the pan in 10 minutes? That's it. I'm not trying to beat them up. I just got to see if they can communicate. Go ahead.
And what are you asking them?
What am I asking them?
Asking?
That's part two. Stick around. You're not going anywhere, are you? Okay. We're coming there. Stick around. So it's a volleyball game. Now, in a volleyball game, okay, that means they can ask one question. Okay? You can ask two in a row. Because that's okay, right? It's only three. More than three, you got a problem. They ask one, you ask one. They ask two, you ask one. They ask three, you ask two. Okay? It doesn't have to be one for one. That'd be kind of boring. Okay? Also, there are different kinds of volleyball hits. There's lobs, easy questions, and there's spikes. Why did you leave your last employer? That's a spike. You just felt that ball go right down your throat. Right? So tell me about yourself. That's a lob. So be aware when the spikes come and when the lobs come. Yes, sir.
On that note, with the lobs, and what are you looking for when someone says, tell me about yourself? I mean, is it what's on paper, what they can see in the resume, or is it more about me, my hobbies, what I do outside of work? Kind of what's not on the resume of how I've gotten to where I'm at today?
Yeah, usually they'll qualify it if they want to get into some of the personal stuff, but they're very careful of that because it can be discriminatory information. So when they say something like, tell me about yourself, it's an open-ended question. It's intended to see what you're going to say. You know, often, I hate to say it, but you're often your own worst enemy because you give up stuff that I never would have known unless you, you know, I just give you that lob. So what you want to do is focus on why you're there. You know, tell me about yourself. Well, as you can see from my documentation, I've really felt that I've built a pretty good career in my field. I've been at it for quite a few years. I'm looking for a challenging opportunity. I was, you know, really excited when I heard about the options in this organization, how I could apply my background. I'm rather curious. What did you see in my background that was of interest relative to this position? That's right. That's what I just did, right? I put it back in their court. Now they got to talk. And what are they going to do? They're going to tell me what I just asked them. Now I've got ammunition to draw background and explain to them how I can make an impact. Okay? It's pretty straightforward once you know how to do this stuff. Okay, so if they ask you questions, you got to respond. You don't say, wait a minute, sorry, that was the fourth question. Marty said you got to wait. Okay, no. Answer the question. Yes, sir. Oh, when you're starting to slouch in your chair and, you know, no.
Questioning, you know, when you're in the interview and all of a sudden.
You always want to look comfortable. And by that I mean comfortable. Like you're sitting in your home talking with your friend, okay? Not too comfortable where you're taking your shoes off and putting on the coffee table, okay? Unless you're invited to do that. And even if they invited you to do that, you wouldn't do it, right? But not so stiff that you're sitting there in your chair like, okay, what's next, right? All the time.
Really,
yep.
Then, you know.
That's right. And some of the worst challenges with that are when they take you to lunch, because that's when people kind of feel like, oh, I'm having lunch. We're having a meal together. I get comfortable. And the way some people eat, it's unbelievable. You know, it's like, really? You know, it's you got to mind your manners, right? I mean, in all these circumstances.
When the interviewer says, tell me about yourself, is he or she kind of hoping maybe you're going to give up some of that information that they're not?
They're looking for a number of things, right? They're looking for your nonverbal communication. Do you say it with confidence? They're looking for consistency in what's on your documentation. They're looking for your thought process, what you think's important. You're going to tell me first. Well, I was born in Detroit, Michigan. I wanted to be near my mother. You know, no. You know, talk about why you're there. You know, talk about, you know, you don't want to tell them about your wife and five kids. They don't need to know that. But if they ask you, and they shouldn't, but if they ask you, are you a family person?
What do you say?
I'm sorry, I can't tell you that. That's a discriminatory question. You can't ask me that. No, you can't do that. Okay? So hopefully, when we get into the next section, which is coming, the two of you got to get together because you asked the same kinds of questions. We'll talk about what you got to do, because by then you would have observed in that office, are there any other badges of glory on their desk, on the wall? Do they have a family? This is an opportunity to tie it together, okay, to use that information to your advantage. So, five things. There they are. There's two sides to the window, all kinds of communication going on, right? What's the employer's goal? Come on, somebody. What's the employer's goal? To do what? Best candidate, lowest risk. Best candidate, everybody say it. Best candidate, lowest risk. What's your goal? Best job, lowest risk. Same thing, okay. What's the critical time curve all about? You never get a second chance to do what? Okay, so that cognitive dissonance, right? That moment of self-fulfilling prophecy, the early part of the interview is very important because you never get bounced back if you start looking like a bozo out of the gate, right? Okay, find a balance. What's the balance? What's the model you're going to remember when you find a balance? Teeter-totter. Find a balance. Teeter-totter, right? Back and forth communications, and then have a conversation. What's the model you're going to use there? Volleyball, right? So what's the rule? How many questions can they ask when you have to turn it around? What's the maximum? 3. If you do that, it'll work. I'm telling you, it'll work, okay? So that's the generic information. Right now, as you sit here, you have enough information to be dangerous. I mean, agreed? You had more than when you walked in the door, right? So you just got an inside look into what those of us in HR look at, okay? Now, I say this in all modesty. I've done this a long time. This is it. This is it. There's no magic bullet. This is it. This stuff works. This is what we look for, okay? That's the generic stuff. Now, let's look at each side of the desk. Go to your next section on your handout. The employer's perspective. We're going to start there first. Since it's their volleyball game, it's their court, we're going to look at their situation first. Any questions about... Yes, sir.
Could you quickly... I mean, I don't want to take up a lot of time with it. Could you go over the cognitive dissonance.
Self-fulfilling prophecy. Okay, so the interview starts, and we all have the greatest expectation it's going to go well. The employer's hoping it's going... Oh, I didn't mention that. If you come into my office and I think you're really a possible candidate, I'm really hoping you're going to be good because I really want to be done with this search. I want to get the person in job and move on, okay? But I'm not going to hire just anybody. That's why it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. I'm hoping, but I'm also, you know, I'm leery. So that's where it starts. Okay, they look good, but what's not good about them? That's the self-fulfilling prophecy. I think there's going to be a problem. And all of a sudden, there's a disharmony in my thought and I start seeing good stuff. So I'm thinking, maybe this is the one. Okay? That's what that means. All right. Any other questions before we move on? Hearing none, we'll go on to the employer's perspective. All right. 5 things the employer look for. Now, I'm telling you, these are the 5 things that I look for every time I interview somebody. Obviously, I'm going into more detail about a particular role. But in the big picture perspective, the 5 things I'm going to tell you are the 5 things I look for, okay? The very first one is attitude. Attitude. So what do I mean by attitude? Look at your handout. Attitude is everything. If you believe in yourself, I'm going to believe it, okay? If you're cocky and arrogant, I'm going to believe that. If you look like you're scared to death, I'm going to believe that. How you come across in the interview is very, very important. So I look for attitude. Do you look professional? Are you communicating in a very professional manner? Okay. What is your overall interviewing demeanor and behavior during the process? So basically, we can look at attitude 3 ways. We can look at it from somebody who's aggressive on a scale to somebody who's passive. Okay, so what's aggressive behavior? It's that teeter-totter with the interviewer's legs up in the air, right? It's your interview. You're taking charge. So you're coming in there, and they're going to have to sell you that this is a good place to work. That guy's out of my office before 10 minutes, let alone an hour. You come into the office with that kind of an attitude, why would I want you to work with us? You know, it's about being professional. It's about being appropriate. What's aggressive behavior? Demanding. Attacking, dominating, overbearing. Have you ever met somebody that's really aggressive in their approach? Doesn't that describe them? Okay. Does that make you feel warm and fuzzy? No. Who likes an aggressive kind of person? All right. If you met somebody like that, wouldn't you kind of, whoa, wait a minute. Wouldn't you back off for a second saying, what's going on here? So why would you be aggressive in the interview? Why do we get aggressive in the interview? Ed? Nerves, we're afraid. Or we go to the other side. We get passive. And we sit there and we let them beat us to death with questions. Now, everybody in this room, look at that continuum and put yourself on that timeline somewhere. Are you more over this way or are you more over this way? Okay? What you really have to be is assertive. But if you're this, okay, it's if you're already coming this way, you're leaning this way, because of the pressure of the interview, you're going to do this more. Because you're going to regress to yourself, who you are, rather than a learned behavior. That's what assertiveness is. Look at your definition. It's a learned way of communicating, a learned way of working with people mutually respectfully. Okay? If you tend to be passive, okay, by nature, you're more laid back. You get to the interview, you're going to be more passive because your nerves are going to kick in. So you have to know yourself. Remember we said that back in the first section this morning? Know yourself. Know who you are and work with that. You've got to be assertive in the interview. If you ask questions, is that an action of passivity or aggressiveness? It's assertive. Asking questions, it's mutual respect. Right? Look at assertive behavior. Direct, open, honest, sincere, respectful, self-confident. Who wouldn't hire somebody like that?
You know, I actually have a point to that. You don't want to be perceived as aggressive.
Yep. Well, I think the point you're trying to make, I hear exactly what you're saying. The point you're trying to make basically is how it's being perceived.
Yes.
And everybody has a different perspective. Okay? So the issue is to adjust according to the interview process.
Yes.
Okay? And that's really what you have. The simple answer is, you know, we want you to be assertive, but depending upon how you're coming across, you may end up moving a little closer to passivity, but from their perspective, that looks assertive. It doesn't look like you're going this way. So you've got to read your interviewer, which is why it was so important. We talked about it in the beginning to understand the dynamics, kind of look at your interviewer, get a feel for it. That's what's got to happen. I completely agree with you, by the way. It's about perception. It is what it is. It's what the world we live in. You know, I mean, that's what we deal with every day. So I do agree, but I still have to stand the ground that says I'm really looking for assertiveness. I'm looking for somebody that believes in themselves, but is also, I think the descriptor there is confident, but humble in their approach. There's a difference. Okay, confident, but humble. Yes?
Triggers something with him. His ex-wife is like that, and he was just, you know, and I just, you know, and I know in my head, and he knows in his head, that it's nothing to do with me, but I have to learn to manage that. Now, of course, that's someone that I'm in an actual work relationship with, and you know, for years, and it's a very positive relationship. But I have to realize, and then I wonder how often does that happen? That something that I'm doing in all innocence. Even a tone of voice that is just my normal tone of voice, but it might be some like teacher that scolded them when they were a child, and they have this subconscious flashback. And you know, we can't control those kinds of things. And I appreciate you asking that question because it's caused me to sit over here and just be thinking. And I'm sorry, Marty, I'm taking over a little bit.
No, you do it.
I think
except do it here.
I think that, yeah, I don't even remember it, so I can't start over. But what that does, it actually brought to mind is that, you know, that's where I guess we just have to trust God. Because we are who we are, and that person is, we don't know who they are if we're interviewing with them. We don't know if they had a flat tire on the way to work. We don't know, we don't know any of that stuff. And so I don't really want to work for anybody that would, you know, misperceive me and intentionally downgrade me. Now my boss and I, it's just like a communication thing. It's not that he demeans my work or anything, which I think is something like what you were saying, that something wouldn't be valued when it really ought to because it's more than equal. So I think, you know, I think that is where we just do the best that we can and trust God.
And not to belabor the issue, but I met with someone who graduated ahead of me and they've gotten several promotions. And she told me, Joanne, you gotta cut this nice girl set. You have people are gonna call you.
fees or whatever, but that's what they're looking to progress. And this is her opinion. She works for a reputable company. And I told her, I said, I'm a nice person, you know, so I don't want to just become a certain way just to progress in a corporate culture. And the long story short, she's like, it doesn't get you anywhere. Did you read that book, Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office? It's true. It doesn't get, you know, and then it was just functioning in the male perception and male-dominated industry. So it just is something that I always, as I'm trying to grow, I always have at the back of my head, what's the best way to behave? How do you, you know, how are you perceived? All those things I think about.
That's just something you have to trust the Lord.
Very impressive. You come across very
quickly. Question in the back here.
No, I just want to speak to what she said.
Okay. That's a great answer. Okay. Thank you for raising that point. That's a very, very good point.
And that might be an opportunity for you to witness that.
Hey, that's right. Perhaps that's how the door opened. All right, attitude. We've already covered that pretty sufficiently, right? Poor attitude, not a good experience. Good attitude, probably a good experience, right? Chemistry and personality. Okay, so just like we had a continuum from aggressiveness to passiveness, we've got some different approaches here as well. We've got, you know, what I call the used car salesman approach, okay, and the military approach, okay? So tell me what a used car salesman is like. They're turning on the charm. Hey, Greg, great to see you. Thanks for interviewing me, man. This is a wonderful office. What a great administrative support. I was just jazzed to be here. They're trying to sell everything before they even, right? You've been in that situation. You've had somebody like that in your life, right? That's one extreme. The other extreme is the person that wouldn't crack a smile. Yes, sir. Not a problem, sir. Take the ill, sir. The military approach where you're all really, really stiff and, you know, there's no personality. You're like a piece of dry toast, you know, like they said on my Greek wedding, whatever that was. And he's like a piece of toast, dry toast. Okay. So you got to be, and again, it's you got to be yourself, right? The proper approach. Be yourself. Now, just know, again, look at the continuum. Where are you? Are you more this way? If this is kind of that middle point where it's be yourself, okay? What is yourself? Are you over here? This isn't going to fly. Is this you? That's not going to fly either. So what you have to do is adjust accordingly, but not so much that you give them a false sense of who you are, because sooner or later, they got to work with you, right? So you want to be yourself, but you got to be on your best behavior. You got to be on your best professional behavior. That's the plan here, okay? So if you really are more of a military, you're really serious, everything's serious, lighten up, you know, lighten up a little bit. On the other hand, if you're this person where everything's a game, you know, this is a time to be focused and be serious about where you are and what you're doing. So find that balance, okay? That's really important. Number three, communication skills. All right, we communicate a lot of different ways, but what's the most important thing about communication? Don't look at your book. What's the most important thing about communicating? Listening. Listening. How can you communicate unless you just heard what they asked you?
What?
What? Huh? What? Could you repeat that, please? You got to listen, okay? You need to hear what came in. Somebody said it earlier. We were talking about something and how a person can answer the question they weren't even asked. It sounds evasive that, you know, I asked you the question, but you gave me some information that really wasn't relevant. So now I've got to say, did they not hear me? Or were they not listening? Or are they intentionally trying to lead me down another path? Because because they don't want to tell me the truth. See, I don't know. I can't read your mind. So I'm going to go there. Remember cognitive dissonance? Self-fulfilling prophecy? Okay. So the most important aspects of communicating is listening first. And then when you open your mouth, it better be the truth. Don't stretch it. Don't try to make a mountain out of a molehill. Tell the truth. Okay? That can be very hard. So why were you fired from your last job? That can be very hard to communicate because you feel like, wow, they just threw me under the bus. How am I going to talk about this? I'm going to show you how to talk about that in a minute, okay? So we'll get to that. But just understand, they're looking for whether you're listening when they ask a question. Did you understand what I just asked you? Were you listening when I asked you the question? Do I believe what you're saying? And if there's a break between what you're telling me and what I think you're telling me based upon your nonverbal body language, what do I believe? Nonverbal every time. Nonverbal every time. Okay? You can tell me all day long how great you are, but if look in your face is you're scared to death, won't matter. Okay? So that being said, we've all heard that we communicate three ways: written, verbal, and nonverbal. So written communications. The important thing there is that everything needs to be impeccable. I think Kim mentioned it earlier. You know, it's gotta be right. Your grammar, punctuation, capitalization, you know, it's got to be right. Your resumes, your letters, your thank you notes, all the things that you do, your applications, the assessments that you might complete online, all of this stuff. Written communications has got to be done right and consistent. Don't hand in a resume that says you graduated in 1992 and tell them, you know, 1982 on your, you know, on your application. It's important because now there's confusion there. And if you're not accurate in your initial step to the company, chances are good that you're going to be making these kinds of mistakes down the road. Written communications. You want to talk about testing for a minute? Everybody always asks me, what about testing? We talked about it just for a moment. Many organizations use assessments now, right? They ask you questions. So how many of you have had some kind of assessment? It's the way it is right now, right? Why? Why do they do it? Screen, get a sense of how close they are. There are ways to evaluate by position key competencies necessary to be effective in that job. Assessments tend to drill down to those competencies. Okay? The general rule of thumb is when you're doing an assessment, be honest, be truthful. Don't try to overthink it. You can screw it up even worse. Say it the way it is. Okay? And many of the assessments you take give you a forced choice between two answers and both are good. The ideal situation is to respond as you believe you should because it's who you are, not as you think I want to see, okay? Because you're already lying to me. You haven't gotten a job yet. Tell me who you are. Show me what you're doing. And you know what? If the competencies say you had to have these eight things and you've got two, you don't want that job. You're just setting yourself up for failure. Remember, there's a job out there for you. The Lord has an opportunity. He's going to open the right door. So don't force the issue by playing your cards. Just go through the process. Yes, sir?
Something to be aware of, because I just went through this recently. When you fill out your assessment, be truthful on your assessment, because the interview I had, they focused on not my positives, but they focused on what I indicated were my negatives and myself.
Sure.
And wanted me to respond. And, you know, I had to remember what I said.
Absolutely.
Saying something, you yeah. didn't say it right.
Yeah, try to remember all the lies you told, yeah. Let's see.
I said that going in. We're going to be focused on your assessment before focusing on what you considered were weaknesses.
But it's interesting you make the point. See, he just validated the fact that they're looking for negatives first. I mean, at the end of the day, they can see the positive stuff. Oh, you got an MBA. Great, terrific, okay. So why are you transitioning industries from this where you've been successful to this? What's going on back here? I mean, they're looking for what's wrong. And that's exactly what you're talking about. Assessments are doing the same thing. They want to generically measure what might not be a good compatibility fit. That's all it is. And if it isn't and it comes out that you're not, okay. Okay. You might believe you are, but they think you're not. That's all that counts. Okay? Go to the next thing because there's plenty of opportunity. It's their loss. Actually, it's your gain. Okay, because you don't want the job you can't do to their expectations. So, any other questions about testing? Most of it's done online now, right? They don't sit you down with a piece of paper and 45 minutes, go. You know, they don't do that anymore. At least most companies don't.
I have a question.
Yes.
Has anybody or have you seen, there's a kind of assessment that they have now where it's almost like a virtual trial of doing the job?
Sort of a work study kind of thing, a work sample?
No, it's generally for like entry-level jobs like customer service or telemarketing or something. I mean, and during this little, like, it's in the e-learning, which is why I know about it, because the company that makes these approached my company about helping with them. And it actually, like, simulates a customer, and you're having to respond to all this. And it's very different type of, I mean, they're actually not assessing the personality. They're assessing the native underlying skills.
Yep.
I mean, it's very sophisticated.
They've come up with a way to identify questions to ask that ultimately reveal the competencies that you'll need to be effective on the job. So that's all it is. It's just another way of doing the same thing.
Just go and apply for a job in Cleveland. You'll find out exactly
what
she's talking about.
Yeah. And, yeah, you don't want to apply for a job there anyway. Every time I turn around, they're dropping people out.
My question, does anybody ever get a job?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a very good point. Let's talk about that. Okay, what's the unemployment rate? Anybody know? Sorry, what?
Was it 5.7?
Yeah, 5.7. So what's the employment rate?
Very high. 94.3.
You got 9.5 chances out of whatever it is to get there, right?
Yep.
That's pretty good. But do you think of it that way? Oh, no, I'm one of the 4.5, you know, I'm never going to find a job. Yeah, you will. You will. You just have to do it. You gotta put it in gear. You gotta kickstart it. It'll happen. You know, and incidentally, so that we're real, that 5.7%, that doesn't count the people that stop looking. Okay? So it's higher than that. But even if it's 20%, you still got 8 out of 10 options here. And you're all very valuable. You just gotta find the right fit. That's what it's about. It's about finding the right fit. Okay? It's not because they don't like you, not because you're not good enough. It's about fit, okay? Technically, culturally. That's what it's about. Okay. Written communications, verbal communications. When you answer a question, they're going to ask you a question, right? So tell me about yourself. I've asked that question. I've had people go on for 20 minutes. It's like, really? You're going to tell me your life story here for 20 minutes? No, of course not. Hopefully you wouldn't do that. That's the extreme case. But people can easily take 3, 5, 10 minutes just to answer one simple question and reveal all kinds of stuff I never even would have known unless you opened your mouth and told me. So the rule of thumb is when you answer a question, it really shouldn't take you any longer than about 20 to 90 seconds. See that? 20 is on the short side. In other words, there is no such thing as a yes or no response. There is no such thing as a yes or no response. You, even if you're going to say yes, put something behind it. Okay, it's not just yes. Okay? There is no such thing. Yes, ma'am.
I taught interpersonal communication to middle schoolers. But, one of the things I gave for this is trying to break them up the yes or no answers in a conversation, and we call them fancy answers.
I'm sorry, advanced answers?
Fancy.
Oh, fancy answers.
Fancy.
It's kind of like fancy dancers.
Go ahead.
Yeah. That's right. Now they come up with another question, yeah. A great way to deal with those things is, what we're going to talk about in a second, is turning it back around. The important point here is, see what it says there? 20, 90 seconds? Okay. You really have 20, 90 seconds. But there are some times where people ask you, give me an example of one of your biggest challenges you faced, what circumstances you overcame, and what was the result of your action? So is that one question? That's three. So you've got 3 times 90 seconds to handle it. More than that, as soon as you go too far, it's like, get to the end of it. I'm going to go to sleep here. Right? So just remember, it's about the more information data points you can get in, the better off you're going to be. So long as the information data points hit, kind of scratch them where they itch. Okay? You got to hit the points they're trying to fill. Find. Grammar. Verbal communication. Grammar. Okay, I had a recent grad. I always use this as an example because it was really great. I couldn't believe it. I had a recent graduate, English major. English major in my office. And he was trying to find a new position. And he came in. I was in my recruiting days. And so I'm talking with him, and I'm saying, okay, you've done a lot of good stuff here, but you're an English major, a little hard to market that. Let's do this, okay? You've done internships. Tell me what you think has been, at this point in your life, your single greatest achievement. Now, as I said that, think about what you might say, okay? But put yourself in his shoes for a moment. So what did he say to me? We sat there for a second, looked on the ceiling. I thought, there's no answer up there, is there? He was looking at, and so he made eye contact again, and he said to me, ain't nothing tougher than graduating from college, just like that. And I said, ain't nothing tougher, huh? I used it right back at him. He said, you bet your fill in the blank. You're done. That's that moment when the curve goes this way. That toboggan, you know. That's it. Okay, thank you. See ya. Thanks a lot. Bye. I mean, you know, you've got to be on your best behavior. Watch your grammar. You know, consider the listener you're talking to, right? So if you're talking to somebody and it's an IT person and you're an IT person, use IT, you know, jargon. That works. But if you're talking to a non-IT person and you use IT jargon, you just lost me. I haven't got a clue what you're talking about. You can say it, but it doesn't matter. Turn it into more generic language. Okay? So verbal communication. And there's got to be continuity. If you're going to tell me about your greatest achievement, it better sound like it's an achievement. Your body language, what your tone of voice is all about. You know, yeah, I've done great things at that company. I mean, come on. You got to project it. You got to talk about what you believe in. So there has to be continuity in what you're saying. Well, you can do that, okay? But it's best to have been as best prepared as you possibly can so that you can deal with anything right out of the gate, okay? So it's okay to stop for a second, and rather than say, well, that's a great question, because, you know, if you say that, well, thanks, I know it is, but thanks anyway. You don't just sit there for a second. Say, let me think about that a second. You might take 3 seconds and then hit them with something. But don't sit there for 5 minutes. 30 seconds is a long time. 10 seconds. That was 5 seconds. Long time to be sitting there waiting for an answer. It's like you can see the wheels turning, but there's nobody home.
Is there usually underwhelming response to that question? Like the responses you get for the greatest achievement you've ever attained? I mean, are they pretty underwhelming overall?
It depends on it's hard to answer that question because there have been some that are right on target that you would expect to hear, and others that are, you know, that are like, that's the best you can do. So yes, there have been some underwhelming. It's all across the board. The best response to that question, by the way, is to basically recount a number of achievements. But which achievements would you recount? What are they trying to find? Low risk, somebody you can contribute, right? So you should recount the achievements that are most closely related to the role that you might perform. And then from them, select one that you were really most proud of. So you're getting more mileage out of the question. Does that make sense? So rather than say, well, you know, it was this. You could say something like, well, that's a challenging question. I appreciate that. But let me tell you about some of the things that I really feel proud of. I mean, it's these 4 or 5 things that I've done, X, Y, Z, and W. But If I'm forced to make a choice, I would say that this is probably my greatest achievement to date, and here's why. So you get more mileage out of it that way. Yes, sir?
On that question, is it better to focus on a recent achievement than going 20
it's better to focus on an achievement that meets that need. So if the need is something you did 20 years ago, then draw from 20 years ago. Okay, so it's got to be related to what you're going to do there. Remember, but they're trying to qualify you, hopefully, into the job eventually, right? They're starting you, qualifying you out. But at some point, they're going to say, I like this guy. So everything you say gives you a chance to build another brownie point. So anything that relates to that position, that's what you want to ask. Okay, verbal communications. Nonverbal communications. So there's a whole bunch of things that fall in this category, right? The most obvious ones are the ones you see on your list there, handshake. So how do you shake somebody's hand? Firmly, what's firm? Because, you know, firm is a relative concept, right? Are we trying? Have you ever shaken somebody's hand where they're, you know, you're waiting for a wrestling match to occur and your hand feels like it just got broken? Have you ever done that? Or you've shaken someone's hand, it's like, you know, hello. Right? So what's the rule? Yes?
Web to web.
Web to web.
Web to web.
Uh-huh. Okay. But what about pressure? Okay. No?
Don't feel
equal. If you do the equal theirs, it's like, okay, who's going to win? You know? You know, you just want to, it would be like you were grabbing a tennis racket. Just hold, strong enough to hold the racket. Okay? It's a normal, comfortable handshake. It's not trying to, you know, be the alpha dog and, you know, and it's not trying to be a Melvin Milquetoast, you know, where you're kind of a wimp. You want a nice, firm handshake. And it is web to web. It's, you know, that's the whole idea behind it. Why do we do that? Why do we even have a handshake? Why don't we just go, hi? Why do we do that?
Didn't it go back to when, I don't even know what
you're getting there.
Century it was?
Yeah.
Unarmed. To show that you're
unarmed. It's a show of, I'm a friend. I'm unarmed. I don't have a weapon in my hand. Let's shake. Okay, so yeah. So it's a great way. I mean, obviously, most people, when they meet each other, that's what they do. It's just a socially correct thing to do. But it's socially incorrect when you're trying to break their knuckles or your, you know, your hand's so sloppy and wet and weeny, you know, it's like, how does that make you feel? We've all shaken somebody's hand like that before. You don't want to go, here you go, right? I mean, if you're sitting at the desk and you're going to shake somebody's hand, or you're sitting in the lobby waiting for somebody to come out and they come up to shake your hand, just have your hand on your lap. The moisture will be absorbed by your pants or your skirt or whatever. Yep. Okay?
The
yes.
Yep. That has happened.
It is. It is. And it's okay. It's their volleyball game. Just don't bone crunch their hand. Just shake it, and that's the end of it. Right. It's very strange. That's right. Eye contact. What's the rule of eye contact? If I'm talking, where do you have to be? Looking at me all the time. If I'm talking, you're looking at me. I can look away to give you a break. That's the courtesy thing to do. Okay? That means if you're talking, what should they be doing? Looking at you. And if they're not, what does that tell you nonverbally? They're not interested. They're maybe not getting what they need to hear. Maybe they're just inconsiderate. Okay? So when they ask you a question and you respond, look at them square in the eye. Don't look at the ceiling and talk. Break away occasionally, but look at them. You sell it with your eyes. The tone of your voice and your eyes sell it. Okay? What about overall body language? We talked about when do you get too comfortable. You certainly don't want to slouch down in your chair. You don't want to have a cigarette out in the car. You walk in and, you know, you smell like this cloud coming in with you. Okay? That's the least of your problems. If you're smoking cigarettes, that's a little advertisement there. Posture, gestures, all these things, right? Some people, they can't stop talking without, you know, you tie their hands behind their back and they couldn't talk. It's okay to use your hands, just use them in moderation. Not like you're flagging down a 747, you know. Some people get do that. That's what happens, nonverbal communication. So communication skills, what's the most important thing about it?
Listening.
Right, you were listening. That's good. Tell the truth. Yes, ma'am. Dress is coming. I think it is. Is it coming? That was supposed to be covered in Best Dress for Success. Do you want to talk about dress? Let's talk about dress real quick. Okay. So how should you be dressed when you go to the interview? What's professional business attire?
Button-down shirt.
Level above what you expect to be on the job.
sir, you're going to be working in the sewers. So you're going to come in a pair of Dockers and a sweatshirt. Might. So chances are pretty good. None of you are going to be working in the sewers. Okay? So what's best for dress for success? What's a suit? Pink with polka dots all over it? Conservative is the word, right? Conservative is the word. You should look like you already work there. Look like you want the job. You should be in your best behavior, right? So how do you feel, by the way, when you have this nice suit on? Maybe it's just got out of the cleaners. It fits you well. You got a nice, crisp shirt or blouse on. How do you feel? Like $1 million. Don't you need all the confidence you can get? Don't you feel that way? Okay, so don't go to an interview with your shoes not shined. I say that mostly to guys. Okay? You cross your feet and they can see the hole in the bottom of your shoe. Don't do that. I'm telling you, don't do that. I see it all the time. Do not do that. Okay? If you're going to an interview, you want to be dressed professionally. You want to be dressed in a conservative suit. For guys, obviously a tie would be appropriate, but it's also got to be contemporary. Okay? This is to your point about being 55 or whatever. If you look like you're dressing because you're 22, we got a problem. Because you're not 22, but you don't want to wear a tie that is already 40 years old. That's this wide and the ties are this wide now. So you want to be dressed today. What is today? Okay? You don't want to look like you're a 22-year-old if you're not a 22-year-old. You know, the 22-year-olds have suits now that are, skin tight. In fact, I got to tell you, I'm not getting it. I'm not long time ago I was 22. But I don't think when I was 22 I would have worn that suit either. It's like they're one or two sizes too small. And I'm not getting that. But okay, somebody's buying it. It'll come back. If you really need to know what dress for success looks like, in my humble opinion, go to Joseph Banks. Go to the woman's version of Joseph Banks. They absolutely, without question, have it down as to what business attire should look like. So if you're going to buy a new suit, that's the place to go, in my opinion. Yes?
Two comments that I heard with guys, and I don't know if it applies here, from people who were talking about it once, was the spiked hair. Not to do that look, like sometimes people wear that gel look, they say it's distracting.
Mm-hmm.
And then the irony is that we have one of the most brilliant new presidents at the Federal Reserve Bank, and she recently spoke to the FOMC with black nail polish. So so it just said it, because you can't argue with her brilliance, and she's humble, and she's just amazing.
Mm.
And then she just countered everything that you've ever been told. So things are changing, but the word is supposed to be nothing distracting with your fingernails.
That's it.
I think that's a piece that we can look great top to bottom and then forget about the fingernails.
Just the little stuff that makes the difference. Absolutely. Dress conservatively.
If you have these crazy, fashions, it's hard to focus. You try to stay focused on the interview and the resume and what we're talking about, but it can be distracting.
That's right.
We're human.
And that should also be a point made, if you're, regardless, guys or gals, anything you're wearing that's distracting is going to be a problem. So, ladies, if you go to an interview and you're wearing a very low-cut suit of some, that's going to be distracting to a guy on the other side of the desk because you don't know what you're dealing with. Okay? Think about that. Okay? On the other hand, guys, you could be as sloppy in your shoes and the way your tie's knotted. It's have you ever seen someone that's got their tie on, but it's like 2 inches too short? They haven't put it all the way up to the top of the collar where it should be. So, stuff like that is very distracting. That's all. I want to go and go, fix it. So it's really about that. Distractions can occur. Go right ahead.
I was interviewing a young lady for a position. Interview was going well. She was really capable. But I couldn't figure out. Something was bothering me. And as we got to the end, you remember this?
I remember. Go ahead.
I realized what happened was on the tops of her eyes, she had, with makeup done, pictures of eyeballs. When she would blink, I would see a second set of eyes. And it was that subliminal, because I was going through the whole thing like, what is wrong with you? I mean,
yeah, Captain Jack Sparrow.
Don't do that.
Yeah, that's kind of scary, isn't it? Yeah, people have done some pretty strange things. I could recount tales, but we won't do that now. We don't have enough time. But yeah, you got to dress professionally. It's a professional situation, so think of it that way. You know,
even a female has to wear a suit.
Not necessarily, but you don't want to look like you're wearing a summer dress either. A business attire would be appropriate. Business suit is really more accepted, okay? But I'm not talking about wearing a suit that makes you look like a male, okay? You know, at the end of the day, you want to dress appropriately, okay?
A lot of work environments, guys are even wearing ties anymore.
Oh, we got to talk about that. Let's talk about that real quick. So you're going to go to the interview, and they tell you on the phone, we're dressed for a casual environment, so please dress casually. What do? Yeah, but ideally what you want to do is, you know, like Ken said, a step up. But if they specifically tell you that, wear your suit without your tie. You know, maybe a sports look, okay? But you wouldn't necessarily put the tie in if they've told you that. If you know they're business casual, you're still going to wear the tie because you're not part of the company yet. Okay?
Things are changing, too. Like for females, it is much more, if they were executives, is a little different in the last year to year and a half. You're getting a few changes within what's appropriate as far as even the very conservative companies, the larger companies, and what the females are wearing.
Great place to go is to their website and take a look at some of the company photographs.
Yep.
Check it out. What do they look like?